Good morning, everyone. So, as mentioned by Alyssa earlier this week, in this week's parsha, Moshe gives smicha to Yehoshua. Hashem tells Moshe, "You're not going to enter Eretz Yisrael," and Moshe actually pleads to the Jewish people, "Please let them have a leader to take them into Eretz Yisrael, so they're not a flock without a shepherd," as Alyssa said earlier this week. And it's beautiful, by the way, to see that Moshe doesn't get to go into Eretz Yisrael. And sometimes in that situation, you would think he would be jealous. Like, if I'm not the leader who goes into Eretz Yisrael with the Jewish people, who's led them for 40 years, do I really want to think about who that leader, who that successor will be? But Hashem doesn't mention the leader. Moshe does. It's important for Moshe that he loves the Jewish people so much that even though he doesn't get to fulfill his dream of taking them into Eretz Yisrael, he requests a leader for the Jewish people. And Hashem says, "Please choose Yehoshua and put your hands on his head, and you're going to give him smicha. You're going to transfer the leadership to him so that when the time comes for you to die, Yehoshua will be ready to take him into Eretz Yisrael as their leader." And there are many questions, but one question is, why Yehoshua? And Alyssa offered some beautiful answers before, and I want to share some others that I heard this week, and one in particular that really struck a chord within me. And Yehoshua, as we're told, Yehoshua was the protege of Moshe. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. He would follow Moshe around everywhere. But I read in Rav Soloveitchik, I think even Rashi may say it as well, I don't remember 100%, but that Yehoshua was a wonderful follower of Moshe, but he wasn't necessarily the brightest student of Moshe. He wasn't the biggest Talmid Chacham, the biggest sage, the most knowledgeable of everyone in the Jewish people. So why Yehoshua, right? There's the obvious question of why not Moshe's own sons. But leaving that aside, because we don't really hear very much about Moshe's own children, but why not Elazar HaKohen, right, who we're told was a big Talmid Chacham, Aaron's son, who had become the Kohen Gadol? Why not him? Why didn't he become the leader? Why not Pinchas, who we spoke about this week's Parsha's names for? Why not him? He was also a big Talmid Chacham. Why specifically Yehoshua, if he wasn't one of the greatest of learners? He was Moshe's follower, but why specifically Yehoshua? So Alyssa gave the answer that because he had a ruach bo, because he really understood how each individual in Am Yisrael were different and how to be a leader to them. And that's a beautiful answer. I heard another answer from a woman named Ruchi Kovel, who said that in Judaism, we don't just give leadership to someone who has, who's next in line, who's the son of someone. We have to earn it. And Yehoshua certainly earned it. He earned his stripes by following Moshe around everywhere. And therefore, that's something to learn, that you have to earn your position in life. I want to give another answer that I read, obviously, in Rav Soloveitchik, and I thought that was a very, very beautiful answer. And he said in Judaism, sometimes it's seen as the person who's the most learned and the person who spends the most time thinking and the most time learning is really, the cream of the crop. But he says, really, that's not really what Judaism is about. And this piece is something also that Rabbi Norman Lamb also says by the Haggadah, where we say that there are four sons, and there's the Chacham, and the Rasha, and the Tam, and the She'ino Yodei Lishol, the person who doesn't know how to, there's the smart one, the wicked one, the simple one, and the one who does not know how to ask any questions. And we naturally assume that the Chacham, the wise one, is the best. But says Rabbi Lamb, no, not necessarily true, that perhaps the Tam, the simple one, is really the best. And why, asks Rav Soloveitchik and asks Rabbi Norman Lamb in the Haggadah, why is it that the simple one is sometimes better even than the wise one? Why is it not necessarily the smartest one who is the best one? And I see something very beautiful, that sometimes it is the person who has almost a blind faith in God, who doesn't put his intellect on a pedestal, but sometimes says, "I don't understand everything, but I'm still willing to follow along." Sometimes that person has the most purest faith. And Rav Soloveitchik quotes something very, very beautiful and astounding. He said that in Spain, during the Spanish Inquisition, it was not the greatest learners who were able to stand up to the Spanish Inquisition and to say, we're going to not be Muranos, whatever. But he said it's the simple people that managed to run away and said, "No, we're going to run away from Spain because we want to hold on to our faith." He said it was those people who had all of the intellectual arguments that were able to rationalize and say, perhaps because of this source, we can be conversos, or because of that source, we really can convert. But he said it was the simple people that ran away and said, "No, we have to keep our Judaism pure." And that is what Rabbi Lamb says as well, that the Tam, the person who has that simple faith in God, is sometimes on a higher level even than the person who has all of the learning in the world. Something very, very interesting to hear. Rav Soloveitchik ends off by saying that when when Moshe gave smicha to Yehoshua, when Moshe made Yehoshua the leader by putting his hands on his head, one hand was to transfer smicha. But the other hand, he says, was to transfer two elements of our religion. Number one is all of the laws, like the laws in the Torah and the oral laws. But he said the other part was to transfer the experience of Judaism. And this is something such a beautiful idea, that he says that Judaism is not just about reading laws and knowing laws, it's about experiencing them. And he specifically talks about Shabbos. And he says that he knows many Jews who are Shabbos observance, but very few people have that fear and trembling, and not even fear and trembling so much, but the anticipation of Shabbos that he knew in Europe. And he talks about going into shul and he lived in, I think, a Hasidisha community. And he says, going into shul on Shabbos and how people looked different than they looked during the rest of the year, during the rest of the week, how we saw this poor person who would work at some kind of schlepper work. And on Shabbos, the man was wearing a tattered bekesha, but he didn't look like he did the rest of the week. He looked like Yankel the Prince, because he lived for Shabbos. He said, today, how many of us really have our hearts pounding by Erev Shabbos? Not because we're trying to get everything done in time, but that we're so excited for Shabbos to come that, like, our hearts are pounding. Finally, 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 it's Shabbos. We're so excited to greet the Shechina. We're so excited to greet Hashem. And that, he says, is what Moshe transfers to Yehoshua, the experience. And perhaps, he says, that is why Yehoshua was chosen, because Yehoshua followed Moshe around and wasn't just taught all of the material that he had to pass on, but he followed Moshe and he saw his Rebbe in every single experience, and therefore he was able to pass on the experience of who Moshe was, the experience of talking mouth to mouth to God. And that was what he transferred to the Jewish people, not just the laws, but the experience of being so close to Moshe. And that is such an important take-home message for all of us, that Judaism cannot just be laws, it also has to be the experience. It also has to be finding the meaning in our religion, the meaning in the Torah, the meaning in all the mitzvot that we're keeping, the meaning in Shabbos. So on that note, I want to wish everyone a very beautiful Shabbos, a very meaningful Shabbos, not just one that we observe the laws, but one that we really experience the meaning of Shabbos. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.